Part 7, The Order's Choice. Back once more in the physical and emotional warmth of India and the sanctuary of the great monastery Belur Mot, Swami was prompt to write me of his joy in being again with old friends and brothers. Swami Abhayananda, perennial manager of the Mot, had been there with a car, a large band of sadhus, right at the foot of the airplane. "I am not taking meat, but plenty of good fish and an egg every day," he wrote. The Lord was gracious to us all that I could get away from the cold of New York, and many other things that went with it, say I. When he suddenly had a fall, it terrified them. Swami broke his right collarbone. I did not get details. Perhaps he made too quick a try for total independence. Of course, it never fazed him. Nothing rippled that serenity. Swami Madhavananda graciously sent letters frequently, monthly at first, and I would reply. His were devoted to the details of his physical improvement, and occasionally to subjects we had had discussions over, like Le Corbusier's building designs in Chandigarh, which Swami had just seen for the first time. I had merely read about them and seen photos. His views were typically conservative. "I was tickled to death," he wrote, "at the sight of the architecture of Chandigarh, which, from the standpoint of utility, seem awful. Too few openings and too thin walls. Who knows whether some people who like the newfangled paintings of today may not also like the Chandigarh buildings." From there he had gone to attend the Purna Kumbh Mela, the 12th yearly festival for pilgrims and sadhus at Allahabad. Back home at Belur, he was going to the temples every day and taking additional walks in the evening. I shall not mention the extent of the walks, he added coyly. Swami knew that I felt certain in my own mind it would soon be time I visited India. He wrote about it. "I often think of you, and it will be a great day if the Lord makes it possible in the not-too-distant future." In midsummer of that year, 1962, his brothers, understanding how the great heat was exacerbating his eczema and other difficulties, were trying to persuade him to move to a hill station to wait it out. I could imagine how troublesome he was going to find that. "Unfortunately, the monsoon has come early," he wrote, "sparing me the need to move." Yet in the same season, the illness of the president, Swami Vishuddhananda, reached its climax, and after a very short presidency, he passed away. "Day before yesterday," wrote Swami Madhavananda, "I was given a lift to presidentship. I have dared to accept it," he confided, "relying on the grace of our Master who has all along befriended me. Recently I made a trip up to Varanasi lasting for 23 days. It did not bother me to travel by rail or car." A most important discovery for one who would now be called upon to travel all over the subcontinent. This is what we had been shaping him for in our own way, physically, therapeutically, to provide the life structure for the destiny his own outstanding life and thought so many years had shaped for him. It seemed all the more urgent now that I have his company again. He agreed. I have been to America several times. Now it is your turn to come to India. How was he getting along in his new role? A letter of September showed the same customary absence of self-importance that we had seen in New York. Quote, yes, it would be very difficult for anyone who saw me in America to recognize me in my Indian dress here. This was sent in response to my comment on the official photograph he had sent. For the matter of that, he said, I have grown rather stout during the last few years, so much so that I myself took time to recognize a photo of mine taken in 1941. Anyway, plumpness will probably add weight to the religious instruction that I am now called upon to give. Most surprising to me was his wholesale conversion. By the way, his letter read, I find the swinging of arms very helpful in walking. It would have made Mr. Brown very happy to see me take fairly long strides, and that pretty fast. The centenary of Swami Vivekananda's birth was a year-long observance about to commence. It fell to the fate of Swami Madhavananda to have the honor and the joy of presiding over this, the principal outward event of his presidency. I wrote to him of our plans in Sacramento to open the new temple there at the close of the festive period, if possible. Glory to Swamiji, he wrote. I am sure that with Swami Ashokananda behind it, your affair will be a grand one. The biography of Sri Ramakrishna by Christopher Isherwood, called Sri Ramakrishna and His Disciples, now appeared. One or two passages raised doubt in my mind as to the validity of interpretation, and I wrote to Swami about it. One concerned the relationship to the Master of Swamiji and Maharaj, respectively. Here is the reply. Isherwood is right in saying that Sri Maharaj's relationship with the Master was even closer than that of Swamiji. I myself heard revered Shashi Maharaj say that Sri Ramakrishna had given Sri Maharaj privileges that were granted to no other disciple. For example, the Master would take Rakhal Maharaj on his shoulders, allow him to sit on his lap as a child does with its mother, and so on. But that does not take away the unique position that Swamiji occupied in the Master's estimation. The Bengali Gospel, Part 4, at one place, gives several metaphors describing Swamiji as unparalleled. I put it this way. The Prince of Wales of England and the British Prime Minister can be cited as examples of Sri Ramakrishna's relations with his two greatest disciples, so the devotees may set their hearts at ease on this score. End of quote. He went on to give information important to me in another way. Swami Yatishwarananda, then Vice President of the Order, is here and doing well. He will fly to Madras on the 5th. He has had to shoulder some of the burdens that should have been borne by me. By the by, Chris had his typed manuscript examined by me. Only after my brain operation, it was in abeyance for quite a while. In another letter, he recalled my query and added this to the subject. Indians who love either Hari or Shiva would understand quickly if I compare Sri Maharaj and Swamiji with them, both being superlative. Sri Ramakrishna, of course, gave the charge of his empire to Swamiji, and Sri Maharaj and all accepted it cheerfully. In June of 1963, when John the 23rd had died, Swami Madhavananda wrote by way of comment that Pope John had done very great work toward mutual understanding in the world. Swami told me his room and the portion of his veranda where he sat had been air-conditioned under the direction of Swami Nirvanananda. It had proved a great help. Monks and devotees had been urging him for some time to visit the center in Rangoon, Burma, and that autumn he actually made the visit. One of his letters read amusingly, "I am often reminded of you by any number of squirrels running about here fearlessly on my veranda and sometimes going into my room. You would have fallen into samadhi at the sight of them." "So you are getting pigeons there. Well, gradually you will find that they are not obnoxious. This will broaden your outlook." He was traveling now to many places, giving initiation, opening buildings, laying cornerstones, chairing public meetings. I wrote to ask if this Swami had not had a hand in the life of Sri Ramakrishna, the standard biography published by the order. "Your guess is right," he wrote. "I did the final editing, reducing the large volume of matter written by Swami Nikhilananda. He has a facile pen." Once again, the master of understatement. Prime Minister and pivot of Indian politics, Jawaharlal Nehru, left the scene in 1964. "Yes," Swami said in a passage unusually long for him, "India has lost its most celebrated, gifted child and leader. As for your reference to my lack of approval, to some extent, I can say only this, that no one is a hero to his valet. Probably at the transition stage, a benevolent semi-dictator like him was perhaps a necessity. Certainly he had outstanding gifts of heart and intellect, which the whole world is appreciating. He has no son, only a daughter and two grandchildren. His wife died long ago. India has chosen a fine man to succeed him, though not replace him. Our present Prime Minister, Mr. L.B. Shastri, has risen to his eminent position steadily from a life of intense poverty. To go to school and return home, he did not have enough money. At least one day he had to swim across the Ganges while returning from school. So he feels intensely for the poor and the downtrodden. As Time magazine wrote the other day, Shastri has no enemy. It is most fortunate that the choice of him as Prime Minister has been unanimous." Swami included in this letter two notes concerning the life of the New York Center, in which we both had shared. Quote, "We shall utilize Bhutananda's good qualities somewhere in India itself. Nikhilananda needed someone with good knowledge of Sanskrit, and Bhashyananda, his new assistant, later head of the Vivekananda Vedanta Society of Chicago, is an M.A. in Sanskrit. He also is a very lovable person, as well as able." In October of 1964, Swami Madhavananda had a fall on the veranda of his residential quarters at the Mort. His attendant wrote to me of his satisfactory condition following surgery. The hip had broken, and a metal replacement was made for the head of the left femur. It was done by a top orthopedic surgeon of Calcutta. The Swami had taken this experience in stride and with his usual dry humor, as he had so many of life's adventures. Here is his last letter to me, dated July 7, 1965. I was delighted to hear from your letter that you have decided to come to India. Regarding permanent visa, let the matter take its own course. If you come via New York and happen to meet Swami Nikhilananda, or even otherwise, please try to bring a small quantity of the eczema ointment prescribed by Dr. Lewis. I am told it is very hard to get. I came back from Bombay on the 7th of this month and am doing tolerably well. More when we meet. With love and best wishes, his signature. But we could not meet. Swami Madhavananda filled the office of president of the Ramakrishna Mortlin Mission for a little more than 2 years. The strains began to tell on his health, and even the powerful mind was unable to overcome the breakdown of his internal organs and the side effects of his medications. The news of his passing came to me through my good friend Swami Vidyatmananda of France, reporting what he had received from a brahmachari at the training center in Belur. Quote, "Perhaps you have got the dismal news of revered President Maharaj. The crisis was going on in the puja time itself." It is a Durga puja. "But it seems he kept his vital force alive through his willpower so that the mother's puja was not hampered. He was talking with the Swami in charge of Rahara when he coughed a bit and then called, 'Ma, Ma, Thakur,' and collapsed." The news was broadcast through All India Radio. The time was October 6th, 6:50 p.m. Next day, the daily puja and offering were finished at the Mort before 8 a.m. The body was brought into the courtyard of the Mort. There was a heavy crowd. We chanted for 8 hours. A long procession began as the remains were carried to the front of all the temples and then to the cremation ground. Within 3 hours, everything had been finished. Vedic chanting, kirtan, devotional songs. End of letter. I have included the details of the letter from India because it deals with final things. One would have expected this account to end there, perhaps, but in keeping with the Swami's nature and sense of the just, I will let the reader in on a special puzzle he posed to me, also dealing with final things. Here is the puzzle. The following conversation took place at a funeral. The first missing word has one letter, the second has two, and so on. Each blank contains all the letters of the previous blank, with one new letter added. What was said, and what was the occupation of the speaker? See Appendix D for the solution. "Blank, do not like blank," said the man with the black blank. "The blank may be impressive, but when you blank a man, you blank a blank power of investigation. Blank against blank will set in when the blank of this fact is revealed.